for encouraging us this morning and for speaking through the ministry of music to our hearts. Always wonderful when the Lord can speak to us and uses different ways, sometimes a spoken word, sometimes music, and we're just so blessed through your ministry. Thank you. Well, I just want to say thank you to you as a church for hosting us this morning. It's always great to go out on behalf of the college and minister, but also to meet churches and others that support us. And you folks as a church have supported the college down through many years. And I just simply wanted to say thank you for your ongoing support of the ministry of Emmanuel Bible College. It is the ministry training college of the Evangelical Missionary Church, at least in Eastern Canada. Rocky Mountain College in Calgary is our sister college, also connected with the Evangelical Missionary Church. So it's always great to come to local congregations and meet you and say thank you. We don't take the support, the prayers of local congregations lightly. And so I just want to say thank you. You supported us, you pray for us, you send us students occasionally, and those are always wonderful things. And it's always good just to be together and have an opportunity of being here today and saying hello and giving you a brief update. I won't take too much time to do that. There's always lots of ways to fill you in on the work of the college. You can do that on our website, ebcollege.on.ca. You can find out lots of news. There's a newsletter we produce for churches that you've probably seen. And so you, many of you, if you're interested in the work of the college, will already know some of the things that we're dealing with. As Pastor David said, our president, Dr. Mueller, is on sabbatical this year, so I've got the added responsibility of filling his shoes while he is off on sabbatical. I know last week he was at the annual meeting of our accrediting agency, the Association of Biblical Higher Education. One of our other staff members was there, Ryan Erb, and both Ryan and Derek did a seminar at this meeting. It's always tough to go to that meeting. It's held in Orlando, in Florida, in the middle of February. But you know, somebody has to go, so I guess Ryan and Derek had the joy of doing that this year, and looking forward to hearing the report this week. I guess we'll have to wait a couple of months more for Derek's report, but Ryan will be back in the office. So I have added responsibility. I ran into Pastor Krauss a couple of weeks ago at the Missionary Health Institute. He was getting his vaccinations for the missions trip. I was getting my vaccinations for a missions trip. I'm going on in about the same time, March 20th. He's off to Mexico. I'm off to Kenya, and looking forward to that. I have to say the work of the college this year is going great. We're having a good year. Numbers were up for us on the year before, which was a bit of a disappointment. But this year, we recovered. We're having a good year for so many reasons. And one of the things you have to do in leadership is not to be seduced by the idol of bigness. You know, because if you're in pastoring a church, running a college, you're always wanting to boast about how many students you have, how many people are in your congregation. And you know, the Lord continues to teach us about this the idolatry of bigness. Don't get too worked up about how many students you have. It's the ones that God brings to us that we really have to focus on. And you know, God has brought us a fantastic group of students. I'm really encouraged. I'm really excited when I look around at the class I teach and I look at interact with other students and I see some of the journeys folks have been on. I see some of the opportunities they're involved in. I see some of the potential. And in your bulletin this morning, you've got a little card. It's a 365 card. It's a program we have here for allowing people to support the college, $1 a day. That's where the 365 comes from. And so if you're interested in finding out a little bit more, perhaps supporting the college, you can do that by contributing $1 a day. But you'll see the four students on the front of this card. Going from left to right, there's Mark. He's a student looking at church-based ministry. Then there's Simona. She's actually originally from Romania. Was in a missionary church-related church there and has been at the college and is looking at, I'm not sure if she's staying in Canada, but she is just a fantastic person, lots of potential for ministry. She's reaching out and doing a great work. Then there's Polo from Haiti. Pastor Barry prayed for Haiti. Well, Polo is a student we have from Haiti, and God is using him in worship ministry and music, and he's just a guy with a big heart. a soft heart for people and for the things of God. And then Erica, on the right-hand side, she came on our expedition program last year. That's a four-month program where the students get a taste for ministry, get an opportunity to go to various places and get a hands-on experience, and she stayed. I loved EBC so much, and she stayed with us and is just a super person. The program she's in, Expedition, the students from that program, along with a number of other students, are on the road at this moment in time. They're headed for New York City. I got a little concerned this morning when I woke up and looked, saw the snow still falling and thought, gosh, these folks have to drive all the way to New York. Hopefully it doesn't snow too much as they do that, but they're on the road. And the Expedition students, let me see, 2 or 3 weeks from now, will be on a plane to Bolivia. They'll be working in Santa Cruz, Bolivia, for about 4 weeks with international teams and just having a great time. So the work of the college is going well. I did promise I'd bring you up to date with the news of Olu Peters. Olu is one of our faculty members, pastor, and he suffered a stroke about a month ago. He's still in hospital, although making good recovery. He's out of the Grand River Hospital down at Freeport Hospital, which is the long-term rehabilitation unit, and he is undergoing intense physio and occupational therapy. He's looking a lot better physically. He didn't lose his memory, he didn't lose his speech, but his eyesight and left side motor skills were affected, and so he's facing a long haul back to full health and strength, and we're walking with him. It's a joy to visit with him regularly. I was on the phone to him, I think, on Friday, and it was the first time I'd heard him laugh. So that was a good positive thing and very encouraging. So pray for Olu, pray for his wife Tracy, who's got added responsibility as she has to deal with all the things in their home that Olu did as well. So there's extra burden when a partner, a life partner, is sick. So many of you know that, have walked that journey, so you could pray for Tracy. So we just really appreciate your ongoing prayers for the ministry of the college. We have a display out front. We're happy to talk to you about opportunities for training, for education. Our mission is to educate and equip people to think, live, serve, and lead in the church and in the world for Jesus Christ. So if that grabs you and you want to know a little bit more, come talk to me afterwards. Talk to Lauren. She has lots of stories, I'm sure, about her time as a student. We'll give you the other side of life, what it's like to be from a student perspective. But in the time we have left this morning, I want to focus on the scriptures. And if you have your Bible with you, maybe you can open it to the book of Ecclesiastes. Maybe not a book that you're too familiar with or have spent a lot of time recently, but Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. And we're going to read some verses from chapter 1 and then from chapter 12 right at the end. So I'm taking off my glasses. I'm still working and fighting the bifocal thing. Haven't got there yet, but here we go. This is the word of the Lord from Ecclesiastes chapter 1. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless. Meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What does man gain from all his labor at which he toils under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun sets, and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, or the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which we can say, look, this is something new? It was here before our time. It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. We'll turn over to the right at the end of the book, chapter 12. I'm going to read a couple of verses. The first verse, Solomon, the writer of this book, says, Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. And then right at the end, verses 13 and 14. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God, keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. Amen. The word of the Lord. Well, you're looking at the title and you're thinking, okay, investments, the right choice for maximum return. What's Steve going to speak on this morning? Well, coming to the end of that RSP season, right? End of February. You're all trying to figure that out. Almost at tax time. So we'll be doing our taxes soon. Am I going to talk about money? Well, no, I'm not. I don't think I'm qualified to talk about money, so I'm not here to give you the tips that you will need to make a buck on your investments. I belong to a mission board, and we had a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and we have significant dollars in both short-term and long-term investments, and the finance committee reported that we had lost 18% of the value of those investments over the last year and a half. That wasn't very good news, especially when the dollar value was about $1.5 million. So I'm not here to tell you about investments. The only investment I can be sure of is the monetary investment you make in institutions like Emmanuel Bible College. Because the long-term benefit, the long-term return, is an army of men and women trained, equipped, prepared, commissioned to serve God in the church and in the world. That's the kind of investment that I can guarantee is a worthwhile investment. So that's the sales pitch. Let's move on. But I want to talk to you about a more significant investment than our money. You know, many of us opened our returns from our financial advisors after the new year, and we looked at the last quarter, we looked at the last year, and we probably wanted to cry. You know, the value of your investments probably a lot lower than it was a year ago or even 6 months ago, and you're thinking, what are we going to do? For some of you, close to retirement or almost there and trying to plan for the future, it's a significant situation. But the most significant thing about what we can invest is not our money, but it's our life. And the book of Ecclesiastes is a book where Solomon, the writer, recounts different ways in which he has approached investing his life. He really recounts to us a series of investment strategies. It's always amazing to me what and how people invest themselves in. You ever watch that show on TV, Dragon's Den? You know, it's a fascinating show. It's a show where entrepreneurs and business people come into a room and there's five dragons, they call them, investment people sitting up on the stage, and the entrepreneur has to make their pitch to the dragons for money that the dragons will put into their business. And each of the people that come forward have what they think is the most fantastic, wonderful idea for a new product or a new service, and they are expecting the dragons to think it's wonderful, and they will then give them money to invest in the project for a share of the profits. It's always intriguing to me the kinds of things that take up and consume people's lives. A new product, a new service, a new idea that they're trying to bring from the idea that generates in their mind to some practical application. And sometimes you look at the ideas and you think, you must be absolutely crazy to think that anybody in their right mind would be interested in what you have to sell. And then you think about it a little more and you think, well, maybe you're onto something. Maybe you do have a good idea. And it's always intriguing to see the reaction of the dragons as they, you know, these are hard-headed business people. They know what to do in terms of making a dollar for themselves. And sometimes they'll be interested in an idea. Sometimes they will dismiss the person right from the word go. I saw a show on Friday night flicking around, and it's a show I've seen before. It's just absolutely wonderful. It's a show called Around the World in 80 Gardens. It's on HGTV. And the host is from England, and he's going around the world visiting different gardens And this particular show I saw on Friday night was set in South Africa. He visited a number of gardens, some very formal, very large and grand, some very different. He visited one garden in a township. He visited gardens that were very old, some newer gardens. I've seen the show a couple of times and seen different kinds of gardens. You a gardener? Anybody really keen on gardening? It's amazing to me how much some people put into their garden. They invest so much time and energy and resources coming up with a perfect garden. You know, whether it's your business idea, whether it's your garden, whether it's something else, it's amazing how many people invest themselves, their time, their resources, their energy in a particular thing in life. Well, let's go through the book of Ecclesiastes very quickly. It's interesting to see the kinds of investment strategies where Solomon puts his energies. If you look at chapter 1, verses 12 to 18, you discover that Solomon pursues an investment strategy of pursuing wisdom or education. He dedicates himself to study, to seeking after wisdom. Remember, at the beginning of his kingship, God gave him a prayer request and said, you can ask for anything in the world, and Solomon asked for wisdom. He didn't stop at that point. He pursued knowledge, wisdom, education throughout his whole life. He surpassed, the text tells us, he surpassed those who came before him. He discovered many things. He wrote down his wisdom in Proverbs and this book, Ecclesiastes. He discovered that the more you know, the more you don't know. But in that pursuit of wisdom, he discovered that it was really a futile effort. It was like a chasing after the wind. Despite the fact that he surpassed in knowledge and wisdom those who were around him, who came before him, he became vexed. His pursuit, his investment of spending so much time and energy in education and pursuing wisdom became futile for him. Move on to chapter 2. First few verses, you discover a second investment strategy. It's the investment strategy where he invested himself in pleasure. The text tells us that Solomon dedicated himself to pleasure, to enjoyment, to seeking laughter, to drinking, to living the high life. Like so many in our culture today, just wanting to live the good life, enjoy life as it comes. But even there, Solomon tells us that this was like a seeking after the wind. It was futile. It didn't satisfy him. Yeah, there's that kick, there's that emotion, there's that buzz when you're involved with something, you're having a great time. But what happens afterwards when the event is over or the party has stopped? Well, later on in chapter 2, in verses 4 through 11, there's a third investment strategy that Solomon tells us he pursued. It's the investment strategy of great accomplishments. Solomon wanted to do things and have a visible reminder to those around him of his great accomplishments. So he dedicates himself to building homes, to planting all kinds of fruit trees, to making pools and gardens, to building reservoirs. The text tells us that he bought slaves. He developed great herds of animals. He gathered treasure and wealth. He had many singers and entertainers. He became great. In fact, the greatest person probably living at that time. So much so, the Old Testament tells us about people who came all the way from hundreds and thousands of miles around just to see him, to visit with Solomon, to experience his wisdom, his wealth, the accomplishments of his hard work. But even in that great, the accomplishing of great things, Solomon found it was like a chasing after the wind. It didn't satisfy. It didn't last. Well, he worked hard, chapter 2, verses 18 through 23 tells us. He realized that the rewards of hard work are wonderful, but they're often enjoyed by those who didn't put in the energy or the labor into accomplishing the work. He despairs at his hard work because he realizes that not everything he did will last. He realizes that despite the hard work and the skillful toil that was put into it, it generates envy and jealousy on the part of others. You realize that we're never satisfied with the things that we pursue. Well, if you go on in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verses 13 through 16, there's another investment strategy. It's this strategy that maybe many of us are pursuing too, of trying to get ahead. Well, Solomon was a king. But he realized that no matter what title he had, no matter what the office he held, no matter what the prestigious position he had, none of these things could, at the end of the day, give satisfaction and happiness to those who held them. He realized that the pleasure, the buzz, the excitement was fleeting. He realized that we don't hang on to positions forever. And that even in time, we may not be remembered. And he came to the conclusion that this too was futile, was pointless. It was, in the words of Ecclesiastes, vanity. Well, he tried another strategy. It's outlined in chapter 5, verses 8 through 12. The strategy of investing himself in accumulating great wealth. If you could say anything about King Solomon, you'd say he sets himself apart not only by his wisdom, but also by the wealth that he accumulates. Well, he realizes that there are lots of people who do not have the same wealth as he did. He realized that there were those who were poor, who were corrupt, who tried to line their pockets at others' expense. He realized that no matter how much he had, he really, truly was never satisfied. Wealth could not continue to give the promise, to give the happiness, rather, that it promised. And he discovered that when you have wealth, you attract a whole pile of people that are interested in and removing your wealth from you. Thieves and freeloaders, people who covet what somebody else had. And despite having wealth, he realized it could be stolen, it could be lost through misfortune, that it really didn't provide a solid foundation for life and living. So Solomon tries a number of investment strategies, and the whole book of Ecclesiastes is filled with the experience of Solomon as he pursues various avenues in life. And you know, he comes to a pretty interesting conclusion, and the conclusion is at the very start of the book. It's interesting that Solomon would write his book and put almost at the start the conclusion he's coming to. His conclusion is, vanity of vanity, says the teacher, all is vanity, or all is meaningless. It's kind of a depressing kind of start to a book, really. When you think about it, he's really saying, you know, everything in life is futile. There's really nothing worth living for. There's nothing worth investing yourself in. And then he runs through the gamut of wealth, education, wisdom, great accomplishments, and so on and so forth. But he discovers a critical truth in life. That really there is nothing that truly satisfies except one thing. And it's that one thing that he comes to at the end of the book when he says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. I think Solomon's an older man when he writes this book. He's reflecting back on his life. He's reflecting back on his experiences. And he wants to give a very powerful, a very singular message to those who will read it. And it simply is this. Remember God. Get right with God. If you are going to invest your life in something that will provide meaning and purpose for your life, get into a right relationship with God. And do that as soon as you can. No matter how old you are, and particularly if you're a young person, heed my advice, says Solomon. Don't wait till later on in life. Get right with God now. Pursue a relationship with God right now. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. This is the advice of somebody who has lived long and tried everything. We should take note of what he has to say. And the psalmist does that too in Psalm 90, verse 12. So teach us to count our days, that we may gain a wise heart. Well, his conclusion is, seek God, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, and then he sums it up right at the end of the book, in chapter 12, verse 13. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. The end of the matter is this. says Solomon, fear God, keep his commandments. This is his investment strategy for life. Invest yourself in a life centered on God. Did you get that? Invest your life in a life centered on God. That's the message of Ecclesiastes. That's the message that Solomon, the king, who had everything. This man had everything. There was nothing he did not want. He comes to at the later stage of his life. John Yates suggests that the fear of God really has three aspects. First of all, it is to be in total and complete awe of God. You know, we sometimes use the phrase awesome. That was awesome. Whether it's an experience or something that we've gone through, we say that was awesome. But really, that's a word that we should singularly use to describe God. God is awesome. I stand in awe of you, says one of the worship songs we sing regularly. To stand in awe of God, his holiness, his splendor, his righteousness, his majesty. To be in fear of God is to be in complete and total awe of God. And in it, says Yeats, it's to have a deep reverence for God. To give God his due. To put God first. To do everything in life only when we have addressed God and God's desire and God's wishes and God's will. And third of all, he says, to fear God is it's a fear of disappointing, of dishonoring, of displeasing God, of disobeying God, who is our Father in heaven. Solomon says, live a life where you do not dishonor, where you do not displease, where you do not disobey, where you do not disappoint God. How much our lives might differ if we try to orientate our minds and our thinking to living a life that pleased God, to put him first. Fear God, keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. I want to say to you this morning very simply that the right choice of your investment for a maximum return is a life that is centered on God, on following him, on keeping his commandments, on pursuing the things that belong to God. You know, the scriptures tell us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You want to be a wise person? You want to be a smart person? You want to be a person whose life is on the right track? Fear God. Keep his commandments. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 33 says, the fear of the Lord is instruction and wisdom, and humility goes before honor. You want to be a person who lives a life that displays godliness and attracts others? Live a life centered on God. I can't tell you this morning where to invest your money. I can't tell you where to invest your time. I can't tell you really where to invest your energy. And I'm sure we've all got really wonderful things that we're interested in, hobbies, our workplaces, our families. But I can say this to you. The first thing, the most important thing that we can do with our lives is pursue a relationship with God. God longs for us to enter into a fresh relationship with us. He sent his son, Jesus, into the world. And one of the things that Jesus said, recorded in John's Gospel, is that the Father draws us to himself. The Father longs for us to re-enter into a close, intimate relationship with him. You know, one of the core things that we do at the Bible College is we try to help students pursue a life that's centered on God, that they might make the right choice for the maximum return in their life. Whether they serve God in a formal church position and or as a missionary or not, it really doesn't matter what they do in terms of vocation, but their life should be centered on God. That's what we're about. It's helping people center their lives on God. You know, you folks here at Markham, I hope and pray that that might be true for you as well. That you are a people who center your life on God. Because, you know, in the experience of Solomon, everything else is meaningless. Everything else will not give you the experience that you're looking for. But only a relationship centered on God can really, truly satisfy. We live in a world with so many attractions, so many things that would crave for our time and attention. My plea to you this morning is focus your life on God. May God give you the grace to do that. and pursue him with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength, with all your worth, that you might come to know God and keep his commandments. Amen.
It's been a wonderful time of worship this morning. And I also encourage you to come out this evening for our worship service tonight. The Rossi family will be sharing with us, and I know that they're going to have great things to tell us. We're going to close our service this morning and sing, "When I Look Into Your Holiness."